Collaborative businesses are on the rise, and this is the Collaborative Business Podcast, a podcast that will help you find answers and provides useful insights to the best ways of working together in partnerships, alliances, and many other kind of business-to-business collaboration. Here's your host, Peter Simoons.
Welcome to yet another episode of the Collaborative Business Podcast. My name is Peter Simoons, and I'm your host. And today, I'm in conversation with Michael Young, who is the principal for a life sciences consulting practice that is focused on global commercialization and collaboration management of CROs, pharma, biomedical, and academic alliances. Tune into this episode, and as usual, you can find the show notes at petersimoons.com. Then look for the podcast or search for Michael Young. Michael, welcome to the Collaborative Business Podcast.
Thank you, Peter. Appreciate it. And it's nice to join you this evening in Europe.
It's a pleasure to have you. And I believe in California, it's still morning, isn't it, Michael?
It is. It's just about midday here. And we have a typical left coast kind of day, bright sunshine. And if I open the window, maybe we can hear some waves.
Don't make us jealous. People are listening everywhere, maybe even in terrible weather. And well, on the other hand, you're making it nice to listen to it, so that's good. But before we dive into the sound of the waves, Michael, who is Michael Young? Can you introduce yourself to the listener?
Well, sure. I'm very pleased to have this time with you. My name is Michael Young, and I have been in the life sciences arena for quite some time now, over 25 years. In that time, I've held various commercial roles in sales, sales management, marketing, and marketing management. I've been fortunate to have been the head of marketing for a startup biotech out here in California, as well as holding senior level positions in a number of big pharma companies on the East Coast of the U.S. That commercial background certainly took me into the business development arena and kind of presaging some of the questions that people might have. This led me to an understanding of the fact that the modern pharmaceutical company, the modern biotech company, certainly those people who work in the biomedical and device diagnostic arena, are very familiar that in today's world, the vertically integrated company, what used to be known as a fully integrated pharmaceutical company, from top to bottom, where everything from sourcing API all the way to distribution of their product was held in a vertical, has now dramatically changed. And the need for external partners, other collaborators, both on the development side of their products as well as the commercialization side of their products, is a key element to success these days. So that took me into the realm of alliance management about 8 years ago.
Okay, thank you. And for those people who don't know, why did it change? Why is it not vertical anymore, vertical integrated?
Well, I think that's probably a topic all unto itself. However, in very simple terms, I think it became very clear to most of the innovator companies that the size of their enterprise was dramatically affected by the rate of innovation. And innovation in the world of life sciences, in particular in the pharmaceutical side of things, has become a very protracted, largely because of the regulatory environment, and has become a very expensive route. The average major pharmaceutical these days is costing upwards of $1 billion in order to bring to market. So looking for avenues in which to speed up things, so recognizing that speed to market is very important, as well as the quality and the level of innovation that goes into that product, and then, of course, the cost of delivery of that product. Those things led to companies seeking ways in which they could collaborate and potentially ally going through, you know, what I think all of us in the alliance field recognize is a typical three-part hierarchy, where you would choose to make or build or buy it if it's available. And in the cases where a decision has been made not to build or buy, the concept of ally comes into play here. And often that's an opportunity to reduce sunk cost. At the same time, if you are extracting the right kind of value from your relationship and your collaboration, you can actually achieve those things you were looking for, which is cheaper, better, and faster.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And then it's also a very nice bridge into my next question. So what is for you an alliance?
Well, I think that alliances, you know, classically are collaborations around a common goal by two or more organizations or entities who couldn't accomplish that goal in and of themselves in a very facile manner. So therefore, a decision's been made to get there in a better way by throwing in together and actually working together. And, you know, these, from my experience in my consulting practice now, you know, these alliances are multi-partite. They are definitely not just one-on-one. Often there are three or four different collaborators in this. Something that's been different in the life sciences or the pharmaceutical side of things over the last decade, but not anything that's new to those people who might be listening to this who have a background in high tech, certainly in the Silicon Valley area here in the U.S., or in the automotive industry, where many, many collaborators globally get together to create one automobile.
Yeah. And then it comes more towards a network of partners working together than indeed to one-on-one relationships.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So you hinted a little bit on your current consulting practice. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, sure. Without being too commercial here, but thanks for the opportunity. My practice is called BioMedWorks, and as a life sciences consulting entity, the bulk of my clients at this time are commercial stage or early commercial stage companies who are looking to globally commercialize compounds or products or processes, and they are looking for collaboration avenues in which to get that done. So as a collaboration management expert, my intent is to try to help structure, provide the right kinds of governance placement, and to really design, if you will, the overall architecture in order to create a framework for a successful collaboration and making sure that both parties can achieve the objectives that they saw in getting together.
Okay. Thank you. And I think it's important to have that perspective that so you're not no longer within one of the pharmaceuticals working on alliances. You are serving many companies with your services.
Right. I think this is, you know, as many people become accidental alliance people, in some respects, I have become an accidental consultant here. Over the last 4 years, I've been very, very pleased to be the head of alliance management for a global contract research organization. And prior to that, I was the head of alliance management for a very large Japanese multinational company. Those experiences have given me some significant tools and significant experience with a broad range of partners. And in particular, something that I'm hoping we can talk a little bit more about is this category of service-based alliances, which is, in my mind, a growing category of alliance management and one which needs specialized skills.
Tell me about it. What are those service-based alliances?
Well, service-based alliances are really focused on taking what has traditionally been viewed as a procurement or a purchasing function, and recognizing that across a scale of services that might be offered, that there are going to be multiple times in which interactions are going to take place with particular so-called vendors.
Mm-hmm.
But rather than simply treating them in a an ad hoc request for proposal or request for price type of approach, that we look at what synergies could be created and therefore ways in which additional byproduct value can actually be extracted. And of course, the larger the scale, the more effective these can become. So, for instance, let me share with you that some of the client companies or in the CRO world are called sponsors. Some of these sponsors are repeatedly going to an imaging provider or a pulmonary provider or a cardiac testing company, for instance. And in these cases, the typical process is one in which the sponsor will reach out either directly or through a CRO and simply get a quote for particular services to be provided to a specific trial. But the reality is, if this is going to happen repeatedly, especially over a longer course of time, there may be some advantages in seeking a more than just a preferred contract. Many of these external vendors have their own business development teams. They have their own data management capabilities, and there are many opportunities for the overall enterprise through an alliance rather than an acquisition, through an alliance to actually extract additional value, which might leverage not only better pricing, but certainly better collaborative relationships with their end customers. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. And is it the same or similar to collaborative supplier relationships?
In many respects, it is. But I think what you're seeing more and more today, especially in the contract research arena, is a shift that is happening wherein sponsors, client, in innovator companies. Had once the internal infrastructure to be able to assure quality, assure deliverables, assure pricing compliance, etc., and of course to oversee safety and many of the other regulatory requirements. Those responsibilities are rapidly shifting out to the contracted research organizations, who now are beginning to provide their own strategic alliances. And these external relationships, which are not inherent in the owned structure of the CRO, do need oversight. And it's one of the areas in which I believe a vast number of strategic alliance professionals will find very fertile ground in helping to manage.
Okay. So it's a new development, I think, typical for the pharmaceutical world.
I think it's one that's evolving and getting more important. It's rather than a circumstance where the provider, the external provider is or vendor, if you will, is simply providing a blinded service. They get much more involved in seeing into the pipeline, looking for opportunities to leverage their expertise, and it becomes a win-win-win scenario. Mm-hmm. A win for the sponsor, because they may actually achieve better, best-in-class or best-of-breed types of experience and techniques. It becomes a win for the contract research organization, because they now may have a leveraged opportunity in which to win more business. And certainly for the supplier or vendor, it becomes an opportunity for them to broaden and deepen their relationship with a select number of providers.
Okay. I think I get it. But I try And that's the challenge always. I try to make it as clear as possible also for the listener who is not involved in this pharmaceutical world. So maybe I'm trying to position it too much in what we know that exists, but it sounds like a mixture of collaborative supply relationships and outsourcing, but not necessarily outsourcing as we know it, but more in a new form or shape that is closer to a strategic alliance than the traditional outsourcing is.
Exactly. I think that what we're seeing now, and this is happening in a very broad scale across the services that are provided in the conduct of any sort of clinical trial. It could happen in early stage development. It can happen in those so-called late stage pieces where in phase two or phase three, there is a lot of repetitive work that needs to be done, but yet there may be opportunities to provide highly skilled, highly technical support that is innovative that isn't inherent in the actual CRO that's providing the bulk of the service. So I think that there are additional opportunities to really better the outcome of the overall research effort that aren't readily seen.
Okay. Now, let's take a step back to your own journey into alliance management. Is there an alliance in which you have been involved in that you would say that was the best learning experience for you, that taught you the most on the topic, that you can share?
I think that there are, at least from experience, there are a couple different alliances which have provided a significant amount of insight into what it is that I'm doing today. There's no doubt. I have had an extensive amount of work that was done with a particular imaging company. And this company, upon investigation or really getting in there and working with them, we found that they had some very significant advantages which would not readily become evident through a simple RFP looking for, let's say, the standard types of imaging that would be done, X-rays and scans that would normally be done. By learning a bit more about the company, we were able to engineer a very complex, I shouldn't say complex, but a very thorough interaction all the way from the data management piece of this in having direct uploads into the data management database. Through to the commercial side of things, wherein joint calls were being made by their business development people and the CRO business development people. So a leveraged opportunity to increase the rate of winning as well as the volume of RFPs coming from any particular client.
Okay, now let me play devil's advocate here.
Sure.
Because some of the listeners will say, well, if you work that close together with a company, why don't you acquire the company?
Well, I think there are a lot of reasons not to go directly to acquisition. It might be a common beneficial end at some point along the line. But often when you get into these circumstances, there may be differences in culture. There certainly are typically differences in intent of and mission for the company. But one of the things that that does come forward out of this is really an understanding of what works best in class for that category. So in the case of the imaging scenario, it becomes then incumbent upon the external vendor, the imaging company, to remain cutting edge, state of the art. Mm-hmm. If at some point that incentive is gone and they are no longer bringing a leveraged opportunity to the CRO, the CRO then has an opportunity to go out and seek best in class, and can do that at an extremely low cost of dissolution of the alliance versus recognizing that you've acquired something that won't keep up.
Okay, so the alliance way of working together keeps an incentive for both parties to focus on the high quality and stay
and innovation.
Innovative. Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Are there some specific lessons that you have learned in this experience with this imaging company that you can share?
I think that, you know, it comes down to, I mean, it's certainly very, very common to many types of alliances. I think, you know, when you think about entering an alliance, the important recommendations that I have for people revolve around expectations. Making sure that expectations are very, very clear up front, not only of the kind of the scope of work to be done, but really what does each partner want out of that collaboration? And one way that I tend to couch this and was a learning from this particular alliance is where does the company want to be a year from now? Where do they want to be? What is their picture of what this alliance will look like 2 to 3 years from now? And by getting that out onto the table and then always keeping that as a horizon destination helped keep a lot of the distractions and a lot of the things that tend to take the alliance off track out of the picture. So I think a learning that I had from this was those things weren't set clearly in the beginning. And I think, you know, a few months into this, we started to lose our way. And so, you know, beginning to the point where you were actually really making those longer term horizon destinations clear and the expectations clear, and then the steps necessary to achieve those expectations really helps solidify the alliance.
Yeah, it almost looks like the theme of the day. This afternoon I had a conversation with a colleague who is mostly in public-private partnerships, and he also mentioned that many people dive into the partnership just, it seems, for the sake of the partnership, and they don't make clear what their intentions are up front and what they can expect from each other. And
right.
It is an essential element to know what your foundation is, where you on which you are building your alliance.
Yeah, and I would go further than that to say, Peter, that it's important to actually codify that. You've really got, or memorialize it. You've really got to put that into a document so that it's a living document that people can see, whether you call it a strategic plan or an alliance agreement. It's important to spell that out. And then for the alliance people who are engaged in this, to socialize that in a way that it becomes a part of the way in which they're doing business. So if you will, that there's a 30-second elevator speech that comes out of this for anybody working within the alliance to be able to tell anyone else, why is it that we're in partnership with these people? You know, just like you said, answering the question, why didn't we just buy them? Or, you know, why aren't we just, you know, sending them price quotes? I think it's important to be able to articulate that and then be able to represent that to your customers so that they have an understanding of why you have this strategic alliance.
Yeah. So you mentioned that about, I thought you said 8 years ago you entered the world of alliances. What was for you the moment in which you realized that an alliance is essential element for you or your business?
Well, I don't know that I had some sort of a cathartic experience when I woke up and discovered this. I think it was more a matter of really studying how companies were now evolving. You know, there have been many over the years giants, not only in the healthcare world, but certainly in the world of high tech, who really tried to be all things to all people and one huge conglomerate. Certainly here in the United States, it's been a system of giants, if you will, much like the auto industry with the GMs and the Chryslers of the world. But if you look at the GMs and the Chryslers of the world today, they are an amalgam. They are a broad range of collaborations, which range anywhere from simple transactional relationships all the way up through great and evolved and involved strategic alliances. I think the same thing is true. The days of companies who did not seek to have those types of collaborations, they are now gone. Those companies who wanted to remain steadfastly in a wholly enclosed corporate entity, it wasn't that long ago. There were companies like the Burroughs Computer Company or Wang, who really were the pioneers in the area of data automation, and they're gone. Yeah. And I think those companies which saw that they didn't necessarily do everything the best decided that they wanted to go out and find the best. And if in finding the best, those companies didn't want to necessarily be acquired. And in point of fact, by acquiring those individuals, they would lose their competitive edge. It was better to partner with them. And instead of those verticals or these silos, what you have now are, as you well know and talk about in your training courses, we refer to these as ecosystems.
Yeah. Okay. And you already mentioned one of your recommendations for companies entering into alliances, that is have those clear expectations up front and know what you want. Is there another recommendation you would have for companies entering into an alliance?
Sure. The other significant recommendation I would make is find ways to metric what you are doing. Nobody enjoys metrics per se. Well, I shouldn't say that. I'm sure there are people out there who do enjoy it.
Of course they're right.
But those of us who have a commercial marketing bent, we tend to be much more conceptual and we're really very involved in the softer side of things and in thinking about how are things going, how is the relationship going. But it's important to metric these, not just to measure sales or productivity, but to actually measure how people feel about things and how they are going. It's been said, one of the commercial philosophies is that 5 years into any sort of relationship, often people don't remember what was done in that relationship, but they definitely remember how they felt about it. And, knowing how people are communicating, how they are trusting one another, how they are then sharing with one another, especially across the bridge of an alliance, are important things to continue to measure, especially in the healthcare arena and the pharmaceutical development arena, when often these relationships, by fact of the fact that the trials are going to go on for years, these are things that have to be kept fresh and energized and on track for literally 3 to 5 years at a time. Yeah. So being able to measure those, I think, would be my second recommendation. And then, of course, advertising what you've measured and then working on those things that aren't working well.
Yeah. I like it. And actually, you're the first one, I believe, in all those 30-plus episodes who is recommending the metric. But you're also making it more interesting, the metric. Like you said in the beginning, not everybody likes the numbers and the metrics, but you make it tangible. So that's good. Now, in our pre-chat, we already saw each other's office space, and I saw a lot of books, and you showed me a couple. So normally I would ask what book you would like to recommend, but let me ask you, what three books would you like to recommend?
Okay. All right. Well, that was a perfect segue. I have three books, one of which is a little bit hard to get to because it's I believe it's been out of print, but maybe coming back into print. And I'll start with that one. It is a Harvard Business Review piece that is called, ironically, Strategic Alliances, Three Ways to Make Them Work. And I'm sure you're familiar with this, Peter. It was written by a colleague, Steve Steinhilber, who at the time was the Vice President of Strategic Alliances at Cisco. Quite an interesting read for three reasons. One, it's very brief. It's less than 150 pages long. Number two, it is really a letter to the CEO about ways in which a high technology company, Cisco, highly successful, could even be more successful. And number three, I think it's an outstanding text because it's written by somebody who actually was in the trenches and trying to make these things work.
Yeah, and I fully support this recommendation. I often give it myself to people, and I believe it's still available as an ebook. So
good, good. The second book is, I think, is a bit more current. It was a business bestseller on the Wall from the Wall Street Journal. But it's called The Four Disciplines of Execution. It's written by McChesney and one of the Covey offspring, as well as a fellow by the name of Jim Huling. So this book really gets down to some, it wasn't designed necessarily for an alliance view, but what you can take from it is exactly back to what I was talking about with expectations. So the four disciplines of execution have everything to do in the beginning with what they call their WIG, their wildly important goal. And so making sure that the wildly important goal is really upfront and visible is a critical element to successful alliances. And I think that that is one of the best takeaways from this text. The last one I'll share with you is really a pocketbook. It's something, I think you can find out there on Amazon, I'm sure. But it's simply called 212 Degrees, The Extra Degree. It's written by Sam Parker. And it's a very quick read, but really a great little pocketbook to keep people focused. And I have used this book successfully with two different onboarding sessions that I've done with clients to help them recognize how important it is to keep things simple and keep things front and center. And so I've asked them, to certainly just keep this book around, and anytime that they have some downtime, to pick it up and take a look at a few pages. It's a small book that literally will fit in your pocket and is about 90 pages long, but has some great lessons, in particular about how much 1 degree more of effort can make in a circumstance.
Interesting. I will certainly look it up and I will include a link to each of the books in the show notes of this episode so people Great. Can easily find the books. So where can people find more about you, Michael?
Well, there's not much more to tell. No, I'm kidding. I am. If anyone is having trouble getting to sleep at night, they're more than welcome to visit my website. That website is www.biomedworx, that's biomedworx.com. And happy to follow up with anyone who listens to this and would like more in-depth explanation, or simply just a chat about existing problems or challenges that they see coming.
Excellent. And I will also link to your website in the show notes. So my final question, is there anything you would like to share that we haven't discussed yet?
Well, one of the things that I hope people who are in the alliance field and might be just dabbling in it at this point or being thrust into a scenario where they're having to really help guide two or more disparate entities to a common goal is to get some professional assistance with this and to teach yourself more about this. Unfortunately, in today's constrained budgetary environment and most, even the largest corporations, there's very little resource put towards training. And I know that both of us are avid practitioners in this area and have gained a great deal by belonging to the Association of Strategic Alliance Professionals. There's a wealth of information, not only you know, through the association, but just the connection with those professionals who have made collaboration management a core part of their offering can help you significantly. So I guess the last thing I would share is reach out. Make sure that your social networking includes people who are in the alliance field, because when it does come down to it, you know, no company is an island here. At some point along the line, you're going to need to collaborate with somebody who is either supplying you raw materials or helping you get your end product to the right places. And it's good to know. In my mind, I don't believe any general manager or CEO of an organization can really be as effective as they can be without understanding the value of alliance management.
Thank you. I think that's an excellent last comment, and I can't agree more. Thank you, Michael, for being my guest in this episode of the Collaborative Business Podcast.
Peter, thanks so much, and congratulations on a very successful resource that you've developed here. Thanks again for the time.
Thank you.
So far for this episode of the Collaborative Business Podcast. We'll be back next week with a new guest. And as mentioned before, everything that you discussed is in the show notes, so hop over to petersimons.com and look for the podcast or search for Michael Young. That's it for now. Until next week.